I would like to now introduce Mr. Manzer, who has been working with Surly Brewing Company. And I actually started looking at beers that are supported from a groundwater source when I was thinking of the Karst, the sinkhole conference coming up in the fall. So imagine my new level of geekdom when I learned that Surly is looking at exploring a new groundwater source as part of their process. So I'm very glad that you were willing and able to come share your work with us today.
All right, thanks. First of all, thanks, Jim, for the pickle talk. That was great. Again, I'm Richard Manzer with Barr Engineering, and I serve as the project manager for the environmental characterization, remediation, and groundwater supply program for the Surly Brewing Redevelopment Project. First, I'm going to cover the groundwater development component of the project, and then Omar Ansari, president and founder of Surly Brewing, is going to cover the groundwater use at Surly Brewing. First, let's get oriented. This is a Google Map view of the site in the fall of 2014 when the brewery was under construction. The site of the new Surly Brewery is located both in Minneapolis and St. Paul, between the TCF Stadium and Highway 280 at the corner of 5th Street and Malcolm Avenue. The old line represents the boundary of Surly's 8.5-acre redevelopment project, and the vertical orange line shows the Hennepin County and Ramsey County line. You know, it's not a good project unless you're working in multiple municipalities and counties. Right, Omar? Surly has three wells on their property. Two of the wells date back to the 1940s, and the third was installed as part of the brewery development. The two wells that came with the property are located on the parcel on the west side of Malcolm Avenue, and the new well is located on the main brewery property. There was considerable interest in the in these existing wells, since there are not a lot of industrial sites that come with their own deep bedrock water supply wells. Groundwater from the westernmost well is currently being used to brew beer, and the solid orange line here represents the new 6-inch water line connecting the west well to the brewery, the new brewery building. Actually, if you look at the westernmost well on the image here, this captures some of the construction activity at the site when Bergeson Caswell was completing retrofit of the well and installing the pitless adapter and connecting the well to the new water supply line. Yet that people are definitely trying to seal. This is what the pump house looked like for the east well located right along Malcolm Avenue when Surly acquired the property in 2011. The building was in disrepair, as you can see, and could not be salvaged. This well was used by the previous owner, Michael Foods, as part of their Northern Star potato processing operation. This was a very productive well for Northern Star, and they reportedly pumped often as much as 1,000 GPM out of these wells. So it was pretty productive wells. The Westwell pump house also was in pretty rough shape when Omar acquired this nice property here, and could not be salvaged. The original plan was to seal the well that was in this pump house, but it turned out that the well was improperly labeled and identified, and instead of a 250-foot single-cased well, he ended up with a second 470-foot deep bedrock supply well that was very similar construction to the well to the east well located right along Malcolm. This is a schematic of the west well currently being used by the brewery, along with a photo of what the well looks like today. A significant amount of effort was put into verifying and the construction so it could be put back into use. These activities were, of course, closely coordinated with Minnesota Department of Health, Department of Ag, City of Minneapolis, and the DNR. As shown in the figure of the well, depth is about 474 feet deep, and it is open to the Prairie du Chien and Jordan formations. And then actually the east well and the west well are very similar in construction, so I won't bother putting the other well up there since it's pretty much a mirror image. I think the depth difference is about 2.5, 3 feet. So it's pretty close. This is what the parcel containing the legacy wells looks like today. Or actually would look like if we continued our snow yesterday. This is just from not too long ago. The westernmost well, labeled here as 273805, is the well currently being used for producing beer. And the east well, located on the right of the picture, was also retrofitted, but that one won't be used for producing beer. We're going to likely work that into the irrigation program for the site, primarily because of setback issues. It's too close to the utilities that are located under Malcolm Street. You need 50-foot setbacks, and we're a little shy of that. And in between the two wells is the green box is the control panel for the wells. Surly wanted to have a backup water supply, so they commissioned Trout Drilling to install a new well. Trout drilled the well in the fall of 2014 using a dual rotary method. The end result is a nice new 469-foot deep Jordan well. And just because there's so many of us geologists in the room here, had to show that we were actually tracking the rock cuttings, and keeping Bruce Blumgren over at the MGS kept coming back to check out the rock samples. I know, has he been over to the brewery? I'm sure he has been. Yeah, I know. They just moved a few blocks away. They moved closer since you opened the brewery. This is a schematic of the new well, which will serve as a backup source for the brewery. Basically, it's an 18-inch diameter outer casing down to bedrock, and then a 12-inch well down to about 407 feet, and then open just to the Jordan. This is what the well looks like right now. The landscape architects haven't gotten to the well yet, but I'm sure they'll be at it soon. And then this well will be, right now it's not hooked up to the building, but it will be hooked up to the brewery sometime this summer. And then finally, just show you what the inside of the operation looks like. At the where the well comes into the building and city water comes into the building, this is the mechanical room. Just showing the RPZs, the reduced pressure zone backflow preventers. The upper one is for the well water coming in, and the lower one is for city water coming in. So if they had to, they could use, heaven forbid, city water for brewing beer. But if they need to, they could. But right now, the beer that's being made there is using the well water from the wells. So with that, that concludes my summary of the infrastructure for the groundwater supply wells at the brewery. And next, Omar will cover groundwater use at the brewery. Thank you.
Well, good morning. I'm Omar Ansari. Thanks for having us out and talking a little bit about kind of our project. You know, certainly a lot of help from Richard, and you know, never knew when we got going on this project we would need an environmental consulting firm. Really didn't know what it was. Now I know a lot more about it. But thank God he's been here to kind of help us through a lot of issues that, you know, when I was starting a brewery, never knew that would come up. But start a little bit about the history of Surly, not Hams, but Surly. We started in 2006 when we sold our first keg of beer out of our Brooklyn Center facility. So that's just off of 100, south of Brookdale. And it was a great spot for us. The water in Brooklyn Center was Jordan. I think came from the Jordan and Prairie du Chien. So great water supply up there, really consistent. And even better, it was my folks' old factory, so rent was a pretty good deal for a while. So that was definitely the biggest plus for a little while. So when we started off at the site, being there was an old manufacturing spot that didn't use any water, really had no idea what was coming out of the faucet. Obviously, as someone that's not in the industry, you just kind of figure you turn on your faucet, water comes out. That's about as much as you worry about it until something goes wrong. So started looking at the water chemistry up there and trying to figure out what our building infrastructure was. And it's great that, as Richard said, the new brewery has a 6-inch well, which can get us pretty much whatever we need as far as water usage goes. Wasn't until we started poking around we found out we had a whole 1-inch line to the building and a 3/4-inch restriction. So we really never had a lot of water at the brewery. And the first time I really sort of started investigating what that water chemistry was going to be like was spending time. I took a brewing class. You can learn how to brew beer, and I got a water analysis done and brought it to my professor that was teaching this class. And I said, "Well, you know, Jim, what do you think? Take a look at this, you know, at this sheet. What should I do with this water? Because water chemistry is a pretty important factor in how beer is made. You know, the soft water of Czech and southern Germany is sort of why Pilsners have come from that area. That water works really well with that type of beer. And the harder water of England is kind of lends itself to some hoppier ales. And we had pretty hard water and really wasn't sure what the right answer would be. What should we do with it? A lot of breweries RO their water. Some people just add enough salt to kind of balance it out where they want to. It was an interesting discussion with my professor because he said, you know, it used to be every brewery was local. You know, you would get hops from some farm, you know, near your location. The barley wouldn't come from too far away. Most breweries used to malt their own barley, so they wouldn't have to go too far away to get that. Yeast was sort of that magic substance. No one really knew exactly what it was. They sort of kept those tanks going, kept adding more wort, and it kept fermenting, you know, that kind of Croisen process of, they don't know, they didn't exactly know what it was, but they knew if they kept feeding it, they would eventually get beer out of there. So, and water, of course, was the other ingredient that everyone had. It was local, of course, to every brewery. But now, in this time, pretty much every brewery gets their hops from about 3 or 4 different places in the world: Pacific Northwest, the Yakima Valley, Germany, England. That's where most hops come from in the Northern Hemisphere. Now the Southern Hemisphere is starting to open up with some different areas that are growing hops to kind of balance off the summer-winter issue we have of and not being able to grow enough hops for all the breweries in the world. So that's not a local product really anymore. Barley comes from a couple huge facilities. They're kind of dotted around the upper Midwest, Canada, the Northwest. That's where everyone gets their barley from and a few different sources. In Europe, and yeast, as opposed to that having that tank kind of bubbling away, and each brewery would sort of have its own unique house yeast that's just been growing and mutating for maybe hundreds of years. Now we get on the phone or send an email off to White Labs in San Diego or Y Yeast in I think they're in Portland or Seattle. And 2 days later, you'll get a jar, you'll get your yeast, and that's what everyone uses, basically those two sources. So the only local thing left in our beer is our water. And as I talked to Jim about what we're going to do, he goes, well, you know, probably what you should do is RO half your water, try and get it down to sort of the level so it's not so hard, and get rid of, you had some other things in there he thought were a little high. So I talked about it with our brewer, Todd. You know, we kind of came up with that idea of, well, you know, it's not maybe the ideal brewing water, but it's what we have. It's really the only thing that makes this brewery kind of just like this. No one else is going to really have this water unless they open a brewery in Brooklyn Center. So we decided not to RO it, and it just seemed like something else that would break. So we decided to use it as is. So we've always had a lot of questions on, you know, what do we do with our water? Do we treat it? Do we filter it? And no, we fill it up and make beer with it. So there really is no additional steps we take into using the beer or using that water. So water, I think a lot of people know, has always been a really big piece of breweries' identities. You know, we've got the Hams plant over in St. Paul, which I recently found out has got 11 wells, I do believe, and is getting used again. Cold Spring, up in the St. Cloud area, they have had a well, which they've been brewing. Not sure how long they've been brewing beer up there, but know that they've one of the Minnesota breweries that is still that is using well water as opposed to municipal water for their source. And of course, the Schmidt plant, one of the biggest breweries. I think at one point they're up to 500,000 barrels, which is, you know, would put them in one of the biggest craft breweries in America now. So a pretty huge plant, and And their water was a huge part of that brewery. I think a lot of people know, you know, whether it's Coors of, you know, Rocky Mountain water, every brewery that can somehow find a way to get water from a spring, from a natural source, usually works that into what they do, because it does have that consistent character that every brewer is looking for. I think the most difficult things is when that water chemistry changes. When Todd brewed at Rock Bottom in Minneapolis, you know, throughout the year, the water chemistry would change. It would make a huge deal for him on how he was brewing that beer. Not that he couldn't adjust, but he would never get an email or a call that it was coming. So sort of on the fly, he'd have to go, okay, looks like things have changed again, and do a few different things every time that was tweaked. So certainly having that consistent water is a huge benefit to us. And, you know, back when I was home brewing, I think we've got this photo, yep. You know, Schmidt used to give away their water. I'm sure some folks are familiar with that, but used to be able to go over there, and I think it was all free. You could just bring over a jug, or I used to bring over some 5-gallon carboys or plastic carboys and fill them up, and that's what I made my homebrew with. I don't, you know, at that point didn't know that much about brewing and chemistry, but it just seemed like, well, if it was good enough for those guys, I guess we should use it too. So every now and then I go over to St. Paul and grab some water, but I don't know, last time I was over there, I see that the well is now shut down, so they do not seem to quite offer that anymore, but still a huge part of the brewing world, the brewing community, is where that water comes from. And this is a shot of 11 Wells Distillery, which is in the Hams plant, the old Hams plant now. And I think they've been open about a year now. And they're using one of the wells, one of the old Hams wells on site. And you know, Richard, I think we heard that from when we're working on our well from some other, it was from DNR, just the number of breweries and distilleries now that are out there trying to either start well, you know, to use wells or an existing well or drill a new well and literally tap into that as their resource for water. So these guys, it's certainly in their name, 11 Wells, of what a big part it is for them to use that water. And I think we're just going to see more breweries, if they can, try and use that as opposed to a municipal source. It's been interesting to see across the country what's been happening. You know, while we do have abundant water here, and certainly been interesting to see, because there's some breweries out west that have certainly been impacted with the droughts that are going on, and a number of them have been actually building breweries in the Midwest or out east, really because there's not a water supply out there. So Lagunitas, one of the biggest breweries, craft breweries in the country, opened a Chicago plant recently. Stone, Sierra Nevada, they're all opening plants in other parts of the country. One for shipping, because shipping all that water and glass across country isn't cheap. But the other thing is they are getting their water usage cut back quite a bit. And without water, it's pretty hard to make beer. I know a number of those breweries have done a lot of effort putting in to conserve the amount of water it takes to make a glass of beer. But nonetheless, if you're getting less water, you're at the end of the day not going to be able to make as much beer. So our old plant in Brooklyn Center, we used about 4 or 5 gallons of water to make a gallon of beer. So we haven't really seen the results of what our new facility is going to be producing. Hopefully we'll find that out in the next, probably the end of the next quarter, when we get a little more data of what we've been brewing. And with startup and such, we've certainly been using a lot more than we would expect to when we're up and running, with flushing, getting new tanks online, getting new systems going. So we've been using a lot of water recently, but we'll certainly, as time go on, get a little better idea of what those numbers are going to be. this is a great a couple slides that Richard found out. And what, Richard, where did you get these?
They're from a couple of nice old reports that showed beer use, or what some of the sources of water could be used for industrial uses.
Yeah, industrial use. Yeah, so industrial uses, sorry, we've got air conditioning, baking, brewing, and yeah, brewing is broken down into two segments, light beer and dark beer. So it's good to see that they really nailed it. I don't know how they did that at that point, or whose job that was to go and monitor that, you know, which, you know, exactly what types of beers are you using. But yeah, it's I think, a little bit different today. And I think this next slide gives us sort of the quantities of what they were using in the, you know, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. And let's see, we've got our biggest number at Ware at 60 to 165. So, you know, that's sort of that era, 40s to 60s, is sort of when the Minnesota breweries were really going, the Schmidt, Hams, Grain Belt, and it was kind of at the tail end of that, you know, early 70s when those breweries started really taking it on the chin from the big national breweries, from Miller, from Coors, from Bud, and sort of the demise of the regional brewery, and there really aren't any of those kind of breweries left, like the Rainier and those types of breweries. So really, Shells is about the only one that has made it through that. Shells and Yingling, which is a really unbelievable testament to the folks at Shells that they're able to keep going when pretty much every other brewery in America closed outside of the huge ones, that those two breweries made it. So I would imagine water usage is going back up in Minnesota for breweries as far as what they're doing since we've had so many more start up. Here is one of those, another slide that I'll need Richard's help for. You know, it's funny, it's good to be back on the St. Paul campus. I was here for a year. I was an environmental studies major. I would have been graduating from the first graduating class. And I think I took a hydrology class and realized after I got my final test back that perhaps the environmental studies program at the U wasn't for me. It was a little too much science, so I went back to Mac and got an econ degree, so a little softer. So, Richard, this is what, one of the...
This is pretty much just showing you know, some of the similarities between the Jordan and the Fergusine aquifer and what some of the water looks like, general cations and anions between when you mix the waters. So we're kind of looking at, this is, came out of some of the early studies we did for Omar, looking at the general water chemistry of the of that water supply. And I just put this in here to try to give Omar some credibility on his chemistry savvy.
Well, if I had that much, then we wouldn't need you, Richard. So, yeah, so these are some of the issues that we test for quarterly. I know we tested for quite a lot more when we started off.
Yeah, and right now, quarterly, this is pretty much what we're sampling for, to basically meet, in general, to meet the requirements of licensing through the Department of Ag, some of the Department of Health's concerns, and then also just to respect some of the industrial site history that was there to make sure that, nothing from the site history is really kind of showing up, you know, in the water. There's a rich history of water chemistry associated with these wells. And fortunately, the water quality is incredibly great, so there's no indication of anything showing up at these wells to date. And the water chemistry goes way back to, most of it goes back to the early days of Michael Foods when they were doing their compliance testing with to maintain their license with the Department of Ag.
Yeah, rich history is a great term to use, Richard. We spent a lot of time looking at the rich history of our site with, I think, H.P. Fuller and ADM, where those are our two tenants in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. And, you know, they've contributed a lot to the rich history of our soil. You know, at the end, all of this at Surly's, we're kind of focused on the beer. And really, one of the main reasons we picked this site that was huge for us was because of that water chemistry similarity and being able to use that well. Then we looked at 80 sites in the Twin Cities, and this was the one that had a well. And then when we found out, you know, the volume of water they were pumping out a day, we found out the volume, or also where they were pumping it from, which was well similar to what we had in Brooklyn Center, it seemed like a fantastic opportunity to find a site that we could make work. As far as sustainability and what we're doing right now, I think a lot of what's going to happen is going to be down the road as we sort of figure out our processes and where we're at. But most of the effort we put into, as far as the brew house goes, is the sort of the lowest water flow and breweries out there. Additionally, recycling a lot of that hot water, a lot of that steam to use in other parts of the brewing process. You know, there are lots of decisions in the brewery and trying to figure out which are the right ones as far as trying to recapture that steam, you know, what to do with it. Our boilers are sort of low energy usage boilers. It's amazing with the amount of choices out there in the industry now that kind of everyone, there's so many people in the brewing industry trying to talk to us about which are the right solutions. It's been a huge challenge to figure out which are the right ones, because as said before, you know, none of them come without a cost. So it's sometimes hard to figure out where the truth in reality is going to be. So we've kind of started where we're at and going to see as time goes on which things we change, how we're going to be able to kind of reduce not just our water, but sort of all the inputs and specifically the outputs with our wastewater stream, of exactly how we're going to treat that down the road. A number of breweries, bigger breweries in the country, have treatment ponds like at Gedney, which is a fantastic option. I know New Belgium does that. Sierra Nevada does that. I don't know, doing that in the middle of the city, how easy that would be to put in a couple treatment ponds. But, you know, that's something that a lot of breweries, bigger breweries that have enough room, have moved towards. But for now, all of our stuff goes down the drain at the moment, but we'll kind of continue to see how that's going to change down the line. Our site was a huge challenge with the environmental issues that we had. It was a brownfield site. It was kind of funny. We at one point, when we were talking to the architects, we had the lead person come on in and talk to us about, you know, getting LEED certification, and they told us sort of the point system and how it all worked. And I remember, you know, we lost points because we didn't have infiltration. We got like 3 points if we had a parking spot for an electric car and a charging station. I think we got 2 points for doing a brownfield. And at that point, I'm like, you know, I don't think this is probably right for us. Doing a brownfield project was seemed like a challenge enough, and more than 2 points. So we certainly got a lot of help from Deed, Hennepin County, Met Council, EPA, City of Minneapolis, with funding from those groups to help us remediate the site was hugely important, because we had over $3 million worth of remediation that was done on the site, and a big part of making that site work was grants from those groups. So without it, we certainly would not have been able to do it, and you know, I would imagine that site would simply be a parking lot at this point. It'll be interesting to see, you know, as Richard said, we've got a new well, which we'll be tying into soon, as one, a backup, because yes, we do have two wells. Yes, we can switch to Minneapolis City Water if need be, but certainly best if we can switch from one well to the other to do some preventive maintenance. If something does break down, we don't have to stop everything, because we're using our well water strictly for on the brewing side. So none of the water for fire suppression, for the kitchen, for general consumption by the public, that's all city water. So while we can finish off brewing with city water, if something happens, we have a failure, it's a great luxury to have a backup well on site and can use that and can switch over. So we had a brewery owner out from California recently, and Todd, our head brewer, was showing him around and kind of showing him the space. It was before it was complete, and they were working on the well. Or I think the well had just been completed, and Greg asked Todd, he's like, what's going on here? It looks like a well. And Todd said, well, yeah, it's our backup well. It's, you know, we want to make sure we had one in case something went wrong. And Greg just, he couldn't believe it. He's like, you mean you have two wells? He's like, we don't have one. And, you know, they're one of those breweries that's building a place out in, I think, Virginia. One of the main reasons is they have less water they can use at their facility. So, lastly, a little photo of kind of our entrance spot over here. All these are in winter, so it's actually much warmer than it looks like that right now. You know, it's been quite a challenging project. Like anything, if you knew what you learned going in, would you do it? I suppose the answer is yes, but luckily at the end of the day we can still have a beer, which kind of makes a lot of those problems go away. But there are a lot of things, certainly like I was saying with Richard and the water chemistry issues, you know, I'd never gotten, you know, experienced anything like this, so I figured there would be a well, so we just turn it on and it would all be great. Some challenges with that original well, I think there was some debris in it. Those pump houses, For some reason, people broke into them, and for some reason, people ripped off the wellhead covers and threw stuff down the well. You just kind of wonder exactly what they're thinking. So, so it took a tremendous amount of effort to just figure out what was down there, fish all that stuff out, the testing process of that. And, you know, being that those wells were sort of constructed in a period that there wasn't a lot of documentation, it was quite a lengthy process to get it figured out. But eventually we did, thank God. I know we had like a year and a half to get the wells figured out. And basically, I think we turned it on 2 weeks before it was when the Germans were already here installing the brew house equipment. So we had to start up with city water. And it's like, we need to brew in a week and a half. Was the well going to be ready? So, but thank goodness we got it all done. So hopefully the final product has been worth it with that beer, and luckily we're able to make a little bit more now because we kind of maxed out our Brooklyn Center spot. So, thanks.
And I'd like to point out that one of the reasons we were having our happy hour at the Urban Growler, which is awesome, but it is because there's no room because the Surly is so busy. So,
we'll just come on a Monday afternoon.
Okay, we chose the wrong day. We'll do another one on a Monday. But we have a couple of minutes for some questions, and I'm sure there are a few in the audience. We have one here.
I just read a couple weeks back that they expect there to be 111 craft breweries in Minnesota by the end of this year. Do you have any idea how many of those have access to groundwater like you do, or would the majority be brewing?
Well, that's a great question. We have a big craft brewers, Minnesota craft brewers meeting next week. I will ask, but no, honestly, I don't. Flat Earth does. Being that they're at the old Hams plant, we do Cold Spring. Those are the only ones I know of off the top of my head. I'm guessing. I'm just taking a stab that more outstate breweries probably have access, I would think, to some groundwater sources. But yeah, I really don't know. It's not a topic that's come up a lot. I think some of us have had wells have chatted about it, but I don't think it's been one of those general topics, so not sure.
Hi. You've got a wonderful brand, and branding is everything. So the question is, when will you be selling Surly water to homebrewers? And kind of a question that others in the audience might be able to answer is, a brewery have different water regulations for brewery as opposed to public consumption?
We do have different water regulations. So our well water is not available to be used in the beer hall. We thought we could serve it originally, nor can it be used for public consumption. So I believe that's the license from Ag. Is that correct, Richard, how that worked out?
Yeah, the way it works is Surly's a production facility, so they're licensed through the Department of Ag. If it's a public water supply, it serves more than 25 people in the public, then it ends up being through the Department of Health. So right now they just have a single-use license through the Department of Ag.
Yeah. So I think one of the issues, too, is the construction of the old well versus our new well. It could possibly be something we could do with
the new well could be used for, if you went through the licensing process through the Department of Health to do that.
I don't think that's probably going to happen, though. We got enough issues just filling cans of beer, so.
Sorry. Earlier we heard that about 90% of the water consumption in brewing beer is actually in the agricultural production of the barley. And so you guys would have, and the farmers, they're under a lot of different pressures, and water conservation is an expense that if they don't have to do it or it doesn't give them a return on their investment, it's a tough thing to ask them to do. Is there any talk amongst the Craft Brewers Association about trying to seek suppliers who are doing conservation to give them some reason to conserve water because of the, they've got a good place to sell their product? And I don't know how the supply chain works. So the big thing is to get consumers to identify this is a conservation product, and then they buy it because of that.
Right. So I've not heard of any of those movements. I know some of the bigger breweries are talking more with their growers. I think one of the challenges in the industry is, barley is a commodity. So when we get some of our barley from Canadian Malting Group, or down in Shakopee with Rar Malting or Brewer Supply Group, you know, they're buying their barley from, I don't know, thousands of farmers, and that's all getting blended. So I think it's going to be would be very difficult for, in this business, for a farmer to say, hey, we're doing it differently. Our costs are 10% more, but we think it's worth it. Because for the most part, it'd be really hard to pass that product on to the final source. You know, some breweries like Sierra Nevada, I think Bell's, are doing some programs where they own the land, or maybe they own the barley, or they're working with a farmer and it's getting specifically malted for them. Which would be interesting to see. They would probably end up using more water, honestly, at least in the malting process, because there's such a less amount. So I think that's probably one of those things that the industry will have to change. I know that that's gone on a lot in the hop side, but it, once again, you're buying from farmers as opposed to from a huge collective that has hundreds of thousands of metric tons of product. So
we have one question here and then one there.
So with all the craft breweries and regional breweries increasing in number, is it fair to say that we finally recovered from prohibition?
Wow. Well, I guess with the number of breweries, the answer would be yes. Recovered from prohibition, that's a whole other kind of, I don't know if that question is something I can answer here today. Maybe we can figure that one out over a glass of beer. But certainly with the number of breweries, I think we're about to have 3,000 breweries, which is, I think, more than there was before prohibition. Oh, okay. I mean, there were like some metal. I mean, they had to fish a lot of stuff out with a magnet. There were some metal, like shavings, all like tools down there, Richard.
Yeah, it was primarily a bunch of tools and just debris that was sitting in the well house. So it was just more of a nuisance, a piece. No beer cans. So some of the pipe from the turbine pump that used to be in there. Was in the bottom, so that's the kind of stuff that we had to fish out.
Yeah, but that was no easy project, being 400 and some odd feet down to try and pull up all those little pieces. So yeah, they spent 3-4 weeks working on that, right?
Right.
Yeah. Okay, Omar, over here. Yeah.
Yes.
Surly is owned by a company called Pants Optional. You need to explain
the
this.
The land is, yeah. So I don't really know, once again, if that's something that should be covered in a groundwater discussion, but no. So, like a lot of companies, we're told that the land owner should be separate from the brewery for lawsuits and legal and this and that. So we had to come up with a name for a separate for an LLC. And I know, when I used to deliver beer, I'd get all these crazy checks from, you know, the companies that own the bar, and they had just completely wild names. And I'm like, really? We had to come up with a name for that LLC. So my wife and I were sitting around and try to figure out something that would work. And you know, it's not like anyone would ever see it or bring it up in a groundwater conference. Thanks, Gil, for that. So we have a little joke with our kids. I've got four boys up at our cabin that, you know, when they're up there, it's pants optional for dinner. So they're wearing their underwear, but they can take off their pants, and, you know, they're little, so they think it's hilarious. So that's kind of how we started. The funny thing is, when we were going through the land purchase, it was sort of not a fun discussion because, you know, they knew the property was dirty, but they wouldn't tell us where, and they had where are you going to build the brewery? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't own the land. You know, they had all these questions they wanted to know, and I'm like, I don't own it, so I haven't figured it out yet. And the well was another thing that they thought they had it, but they couldn't find any papers, so they didn't know anything about it. And that was one of the reasons we got the property. So kind of came to the end of this meeting. It was about 2 hours in my lawyer's office. We get up, and the gentleman that is actually the agent trying to sell the property, which makes a commission, says, wait, one more thing about the name of the property. And I go, yeah, or the name of the LLC. He goes, well, I don't know if the neighborhood's going to like that name. And I really think, you know, it's a little risque. You should think about changing it. And that's when I was about to explode. And And I had some other thoughts for names we could come up with if he didn't like that, but I tried just to keep that to myself. So that's, yeah, that's where the name comes from, Pants Optional. Great question.